Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. We have a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be talking to a new guest about their recently released indie game. But first, please welcome back to the cast my co-host, James Ellerby.
Howdy, guys.
Hey, James, it's great to have you on. We are recording this just a few days into April. Everyone survived April Fool's Day, thankfully. And did any major pranks get you, James?
Well, actually, I didn't survive April Fool's Day. No. I died. I've been resurrected through the wonderful powers of necromancy. So, awesome. Yeah, very convenient.
Great. And that actually kind of gets somewhat tied into our guest and topic tonight. We're going to be – our guest tonight is from Overhyped Studios. At the time of this recording, they just finished their game Battle Brawlers, the fantasy tactical turn-based – or I'm sorry, fantasy tactical strategy game involving running a company of mercenaries where orcs, zombies, and more threaten to kill your band of merry men. So – please welcome to the podcast, once again from Overhyped Studios, Jan Tox.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Jan. It is great to have you on tonight. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Stress is wearing off a little from the initial release. So, we're seeing land again.
That is great. Like we just said, Battle Brawlers, by for those of you listening to this cast, the game was just released off of Early Access in, I believe it was late March. So, first off, congratulations to you and the other guys at Overhype for finishing the game.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It has been quite a while working on that. Mm-hmm. So, really happy over here.
Definitely. And for tonight's cast, we're going to talk a little bit about your studio and about the design of Battle Brawlers. I'm sure this will be very interesting.
Yeah, hopefully so.
So, to begin with, for people listening to this cast who may not have heard of Battle Brawlers or Overhype, could you talk a little bit about yourself and your background with the studio?
Yeah, sure thing. So the core team is me, Jan, and my twin brother, Paul. And Christoph, who's doing our programming, so that's the three of us. And the game, we're based in Hamburg, Germany, so the game started out as pretty much as a hobby project, and over the course of like 5 years developed into this really massive project, which we managed to get through green light and finally early access and the final release. So it has been quite a journey because I'm an economist, so I never studied anything with game design or so. Same for my brother, who's a geologist. So it was quite a stretch to get here, but I think I can get more detailed later. So this is just a quick overview.
Great. And it's always interesting. For those of you listening to this cast, I just recorded a podcast with the developers of Pixelated Milk, a Polish development team, and they said like similar things that they didn't went to school or went or learned game design. I think they were either economists or bankers before they got into the game industry. And it's always interesting to like see like how these paths take. We have another friend, Z from the developer Serenity Forge, who I think he was either an investment banker or he worked for the government before he opened up his own studio. So,
oh wow!
It really, you never know, like.
the industry really pulls people in from all walks of life.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think that the game making thing is so much about passion, and it's a thing where you can get really far with a lot of passion and hard work. So maybe it caters better to that.
Yeah, especially when you have a really great core group of people working with you. I mean, we've seen developers of like two people, five. As long as you have, you know, that, as you said, and that core group of passion there, it can really take you far in the industry or take you far in terms of indie development.
Yeah, but finding the right people is, I think, one of the most difficult parts of the whole thing. So When we started out, like my brother and me, we had like three or four programmers on the project in the early stages. And then we finally found Christoph, who's just by chance was working and living in Hamburg. Mm-hmm. So we were talking to guys from all over the world through GameDevNet, the website. And then we finally met him and he was in Hamburg as well. And it just was an awesome match. And he's been with us ever since. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And again, like we've talked to so many developers who've had like those, you know, assembling the team stories of trying to get the mm-hmm. right people for the right job. And again, this is an industry where you have the passion. It's just trying to find the people that work well together that can really make or break some of these projects, especially when you only have like three or four people, you know, in your team together.
I like the way Trayvon said it. It's like assembling the Avengers.
Yeah, definitely. But I guess moving on. So with Battle Brawlers itself, you said that you've been working on for about, I think, 4 years. So when did the idea like first like come about to do this kind of like tactical RPG game?
I mean, when looking at the game right now, it sounds really off, but the initial inspiration was the old XCOM from the 90s. And we thought, like, why didn't nobody take that to a fantasy setting? I mean, nobody was doing that. So at some point we were waiting for that to happen and we said, okay, nobody's doing that. We have to try ourselves. And that's where the original idea came from. And the original name of the game was Terror from the Keep. So it's a spoof of Terror from the Deep. Yeah, we changed that to Battle Brothers at some point. Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned XCOM because in my review of Battle Brothers, I said that this just really reminds me of a dirty fantasy XCOM, you know. We're in the fantasy ages, we're trying to manage our group of people, and of course all of our rookies get killed very easily in this game.
Yeah, we wanted to keep that deadliness in the game. It can be very frustrating, and that's what you see. And now all the new players come in, we get a lot of negative reviews who evolve around the RNG and the toughness of the game. But in the original XCOM, you had like those blaster bombs flying into your Sky Ranger in the first turn. And so I think we improved on that a little.
Or for the XCOM fans listening, the exit the Sky Ranger at night and watch like Sectoy just snipe you in the dark without being able to do anything there. But yeah, it's always challenging when you're trying to balance a game like Battle Brawlers or XCOM or any kind of title where, as you said, Yan, that it's built on the luck or the probability while still providing enough mechanics for expert players to go through. And for those of you listening to this cast, we've had several talks by the time this cast goes up about luck and probability in games. Mm-hmm. With XCOM, for instance, like you guys by now will know the story of how I missed like a 95% shot in Enemy Within. And again, you just never know when you have luck-based systems just how they will impact the player. Again, for every player like me who misses a 95% shot, you'll have someone who makes, you know, a lucky critical hit at a 30% or less chance and, you know, saves their team.
Yeah.
So my question for you, Yan, is as you guys were designing Battle Brawlers, I'm sure the game has gone through multiple iterations from its original to where it is today. Was the focus of luck and probability there from the start, or did the base, I guess, combat systems change over the course of development and then into early access?
So when starting out, we made like a couple of mission statements, basically, and one of them was that the game should always be deadly. I mean, we loved this in the old XCOM that you had like 20 guys and you go on a mission and you would not know who would come back. And so from the beginning, it was one of our focus points to have like really deadly combat. And also, we wanted the game to be about stories. We didn't want it like a puzzle game, like, you know, Advance Wars or a game like that. And we wanted the game to create stories, and that only it benefits from randomness to some degree, because you can have this hero character, like a farmer with a pitchfork who's killing the orc war leader in the final turn. You know, it's like stuff like that we wanted to happen, and people to share stories about the game. And for that, we always needed a bit of an RNG in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like for one of my games, I had my spearman get his eye. He lost an eye as a permanent injury, and he was still my most accurate guy, stabbing guys with just one eye there.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it is, as you said, and that's kind of goes back to the original XCOM with those stories. I have read more Let's Plays than I can count of people, you know, basically creating a novelization of their XCOM campaign. And games like this really lend themselves well, even though we're not dealing with, you know, the highest quality graphics, or, you know, you don't need, you know, fully animated or fully voiced cutscenes to be able to tell a story about 12 guys hopefully fighting their way through a pack of undead or brigands on the road or anything like that.
Yeah, and exactly, and that's what we were aiming for with the procedural generation. So we have so many random elements in the game, like the world map, the characters, and everything. And that's one of our design goals. Well, it was to say, like, if two people meet who played Battle Brothers, they both would tell each other completely different stories of their adventures, and that was like one of our main goals for the whole game. And I think we did quite well with achieving that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. I've had people, I was reading like some of my friends' impressions on the game, and they're like, oh, you know, after this first battle, I found this incredibly powerful sword that's now, you know, the mainstay of my army. I'm like, yeah, and I'm sitting here with pitchforks and pickaxes trying to deal with this wave of undead coming at me. And going back to the topic of luck, and as you said, yeah, and with new people coming in looking at Battle Brawlers, it's always challenging when it comes to balancing, again, the difficulty of your game. And I saw, I was looking at the forum for Battle Brawlers on Steam. I know you guys have been asking the community about balancing the game. Like, where does the fans think that the game needs to be altered, or where are things needing to be balanced? So I guess the next question for Yan, and again, for those of you listening to this, we are recording this in early April. It probably won't be going up for at least a month, maybe a little bit more than that. So who knows what the game will be in terms of revision by then. But for like the fans who have been coming in and giving you guys feedback, are there any like major points or anything that you guys are thinking about changing with Battle Brawlers after this new feedback?
Yeah, right now, definitely, we have a lots of people. We have in the game, we have a mechanic, it's called the late game crisis, where cities and settlements can get destroyed, and many people really like to keep playing on the same world for, like, hundreds of days in-game, and the game is not really designed for that. It's more designed of doing, like, one or two of these crises, like, play the game for 100, 200 days, and then start new. So that's something that we definitely will have a look at there to make it more viable for an endless sandbox game. And that's one thing, I can just, from the top of my head, I can mention here.
Okay. And speaking about the late game crisis, I really like that idea of it, of having this kind of like quote unquote like super event that basically comes to essentially cap off your game experience. Where did you guys come up with the idea for having the late game events?
So when starting out, it was most of the early access time actually was complete open sandbox with no end to it. And we were experimenting with a fixed storyline, like you have in a normal game, where you have like the story evolving and the player taking part. And then we realized that's not what the game is about. The game is not about something linear. Other games do that way better than we. And our strong point is the sandbox and the freedom of the player. So we decided to go with like three different of these crises, which are made up of a couple of contracts and always play out a bit differently. Mm-hmm. And that's basically where when we decided to ditch that linear story thing to give an end to the game. You know, many people were complaining that there's no goal or no sense in the game, and now people are complaining that it's not sandboxy enough. So it's always a it's always a balancing thing. And in the end, you have to go with your vision of the game. And mm-hmm. there will always be people who like it and people who don't. So, yeah, that's the reality of game design.
Do you think you'll add more late game events in the future?
So what we will... we are thinking about making an expansion, and I think when the podcast goes live, we will probably have a decision. But if we are doing an expansion, we will probably focus more on the sandbox part and less on the crisis part, because I think it shows that this is more the strong point of mm-hmm. what we have created.
Yeah. And speaking about expansion, it's always interesting about designing expansion these days, especially for a game like Battle Brothers or XCOM, which is more of a sandbox size. So you can't really add in, like, new missions, per se. Or you can't add in, let's say, we're going to make our game have 3 more hours of content. It's more about designing things to add or elevate what's already there in the design, such as what we saw with Enemy... Enemy Within. There we go, the expansion to Enemy Unknown.
Yeah, it's a good thing that right from the start we designed the game in a way that can take on expansions pretty well. So, but you're definitely right. I think it's always about things to add to make the game broader and not mm-hmm. longer. If you know yeah. what I mean, it's mm-hmm. It's to add mechanics that add through every stage of the game.
Mm-hmm. Now. Let me see. There's any other like general questions? I guess while I'm thinking of anything else before we move on, James, do you have any questions for Yan right now?
I'd like to know, Yan, so I love the design. I really love the design of the characters. How it's a very detailed minimalist, if that makes sense. Like where you know you don't have the full character design drawn out. But you have like these busts of characters, and like it's enough that people can be like, oh, that's cool. I get a full view of my character and I understand and the characters that I have and what they look like and stuff. And yet still not, it's not like, I think from a design perspective, it seems like it's also very, efficient. Technical wise, which I know you're not, that's not your big thing, but like, were you happy with the way the game turned out artistically?
Yeah, it's funnily enough, in the first prototype, we had full body figures, which were walking with animations and everything. Uh-huh. And then we realized how much work that is, and we are only 3 guys on the team. And so, yeah, basically it was, we cut the animations or we don't have a game. So it's basically born from lack of resources. And and then we started out with a really board gamey style, and it got more and more details over the years. And by now it's pretty iconic. I mean, it sets us apart from other games as well. And also you have a lot more details on the character, because you can see the face very well and the body. And with like full 3D figures, which can get very small and fuzzy, you won't see all the details. So it has some advantages, but the main reason behind it is our lack of resources.
Mm, oh, wow.
Yeah. And I mean, we hear stories like that from other developers about having to find a compromise between what you want and what you're able to do. And it's kind of like weird about that. Like for the games that do pull this off, that have that really great... like a unified aesthetic throughout its design, the fans probably see it as, you know, this was your plan from the beginning. This is, you know, it looks so great. You know, you must have came with this from day one kind of thing. And then like, the reality is, no, this was like our emergency backup because we couldn't do what we wanted originally. But no, we came up with this. This was our idea from the start.
Yeah, it's where many small studios or hobby projects or whatever fail because they just overburden themselves with work and just don't estimate the workload probably. Mm-hmm. And game design is, I think, in my opinion, it's always about not what to put in the game, but more about what to leave out of the game. And it's even the harder decision in my mind.
Yep, definitely. And we've talked about this before with other developers, with trying to nail down what your core gameplay loop or the foundation of your design is, mm-hmm. and then using that going forward as kind of your test bed and your foundation. So you never want to add something that betrays your core foundation. But at the same time, as you said, Yan, you have to understand just what you won the game and then what you're able to actually do in that game. And as you said, it's very easy to just, for a lot of first-time novice developers, to go crazy. You know, they're going to put every idea they have into it, and they're going to say, oh, well, we're only going to need like a year and maybe like $20,000 to do it. And for the rest of us, we're like, no, that's never going to work. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, let's make an MMO.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And with procedurally generated levels, and we'll do all the server stuff in-house, and we'll port it to every platform as well.
Yeah, yeah, because we live in perfect world where everything is absolutely perfect all the time.
Exactly. Now, before we move on to a little bit more about like the early access side of things, with the design of Battle Brawlers, and I know we'll probably come back to this in a few minutes, over the course of its development, again, with the design, I guess one question that I have for you, as you said from the start, you wanted this to be a fantasy take of XCOM. With the, one of the things that I do like about Battle Brawlers that does remind me of XCOM is the enemy designs and how you have a pretty wide variety. You have goblins, you have orcs, you have the undead, brigands, so on. And they all have like their own unique quirks to them in terms of what they can do on the battlefield and what kind of threat they present. How did you guys, I guess, come up with or design the various enemies of the game?
So what we wanted to do is basically take our own take on those classical fantasy races like orcs and goblins, because we thought they have been appearing in almost every game, but we wanted to give them, you know, our own version of it. And and then we had, from the design perspective, the issue was like every different faction should challenge the tactics of the player, because we didn't want there to be like one dominant strategy where it's like five people in the front with shields and behind you have people with X setup or whatever, and that works against all the enemies. So with each new faction that we designed, we took a look at the at what players were doing, because it was already in early access. And then we designed the faction to challenge that specific player tactic. For example, the Ancient Dead are mostly immune to ranged weapons and use a lot of shields. Goblins use a lot of ranged weapons, so you cannot not really sit back and turtle that much, and so on. And that way, we with each faction we added, we always asked ourselves, how does this challenge the current meta, basically meta game?
Now, did you... like, well, looking at the design and looking at the set, it looks like it almost looks like you guys might have started with historical and then went fantasy, or was fantasy your goal from the get-go, or did you guys kind of start historically and then switch to fantasy? Like,
In the beginning, it was like completely crazy. We had this idea of a medieval world. Okay. But there was an alien spaceship in it underground, and the aliens started to emerge from this spaceship. But the people in the medieval times mistook them for like their typical fantasy creatures, you know, like orcs and so on, and thought those were the monsters. And we wanted them to fight against aliens. I mean, it would have been pretty funny, but yeah, we ditched that at some point.
I think we can call the XCOM inspiration as probably a virtual decision for that.
But then we really love our historical stuff, and we did some reenactment way back, and we're really big fans of that. And we don't really like that high power fantasy with the dragon riding and spell casting and that stuff. It's not really our bag. So we wanted to have like a really this perspective of normal human beings from the Middle Ages against this supernatural threat and this otherworldly threat. So you should feel like a bit like your guys are normal people from normal backgrounds who have to have this really massive challenge ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Interesting. And I guess one other question before we move on, at least to move to another topic. I'm sure this is something that people who are listening are probably wondering, but do you have any, I guess, beginner tips for the fans listening who have gotten them their company killed many, many times in the game?
There's some really easy beginner tips. So They are definitely buy more cheap men and not few expensive ones, and get a lot of shields and head armor and use defensive abilities. The defensive abilities are, most people don't use them in the beginning, but they are really effective, like a shield wall, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the spear wall is also very fun if you can set up that formation right.
John, yeah, Josh, really, I sense a little bit of wanting a little self-help there.
Yeah.
Like, I have the creator of the game on. Ask for some tips.
Exactly. Can you put in a code that gives me like 500,000 crowns at the start? Just to me.
Yeah, there's a developer mode, but it's not activated in the Steam build.
All right. So with that, let's change gears for a few minutes. I want to talk more about early access, because it's one of the topics we've been talking to a lot of new and established developers about, considering how it's still relatively new in the game industry or as an option for game developers. So with that said, I guess my first question for you, Yan, is with Battle Brawlers, this was both your first title at Overhype, and this was also your first early access, correct?
Yes, yeah.
I guess going into it, as we talked to multiple developers about, it can be a very unique experience developing your game with that level of transparency. How did you and the other guys at Overhype find working like on the early access model?
I think it's, we are very, very happy that it exists, because in the beginning, we pitched our game to a couple of publishers, but nobody wanted to take it on. So we tried to self-publish, basically, through Steam. Mm-hmm. And without the early access that allows unfinished games to be effectively sold for money, there we wouldn't have any funding for the game. So in the end, it's the early access with good sides and bad sides. It allowed us to make the game in the first place.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys did not go to like Kickstarter or other crowdfunding platforms with Battle Brawlers, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really a big fan personally of Kickstarter. I have the feeling that it's a lot of pretty much finished projects get pushed there to get another round of funding. And it tends to be like some really overhyped titles get pushed there and the others all get neglected. And it also takes a lot of work to create an effective campaign. And we wanted to put that work into the game.
Yeah, but that's always that interesting push and pull that we've talked to developers about with Kickstarter, that when it works, it can get you the money that you need. But at the same time, you also have to balance the fact that you're trying to build the game at the same time you're building the campaign. And it's just that very much of a push and pull of trying to decide just how much you can really allocate to both of these projects.
Yeah, exactly. And it gets harder the smaller your team is. If you have three guys and one is working exclusively on the campaign, then you are missing like 30% of your production power.
Mm-hmm. And again, like from those who we've spoken to, we've heard, you know, all the different takes about Kickstarter and early access. And as we were talking about earlier in this cast, there really is no one perfect way to design a game. And every studio, every company, every group of people have their own ways of doing it. And it's always fascinating to hear how all these stories basically come together like this.
Yeah, I think it's really funny because it's a special trait of the gaming industry, because there are so many people coming into it with completely different backgrounds. And I think depending on the backgrounds, they have different ideas, different visions. And so they come with all these different ways to fund the game or to develop the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, going through with early access, I guess, did you guys, as things were going on, obviously dealing with the fans, interacting with them, were there any like major like points or anything that they point out to you that made its way into the game? Like, did they come up with an idea or a solution that overall made Battle Brawlers a better game?
I think the most importantly, the feedback from the early access crowd helped us with the balancing. Mm-hmm. So usually it would go like this: like we decided internally on new features and put them in, and then we instantly get feedback on how people like it and do they think it's too strong or too weak. And especially with a small team, you have no QA, so you cannot really test the game because you don't have time for that. And so having a lot of early access feedback helped so much with getting it really polished. Like fixing bugs as well is really important because that gets your review score down really fast if you have a buggy game. And but especially with the balancing. So regarding the ideas for features with the early access feedback, it's a bit tricky because many people who are not involved in developing a game have no idea about how much work a feature can be. So even something that sounds like it would be really easy to implement, it can pose like a really big issue to tackle.
Yeah, definitely. And about the topic of getting eyes on your game, we've heard this from other developers as well, that early access can be, you know, worth its weight in gold simply in QA, especially, again, for smaller teams. And when you have a game like Battle Brawlers that is procedurally generated each time you play, it's going to be impossible for, like, 3 or 4 people, let alone maybe 10 or 15, to check every aspect of your game.
Yeah, it's really funny that many of our players know the game a bit better than we do. We're just developing it all the time, and we have little time to actually play it. So some people have like 700 hours, 800 hours in the game, and it's just really insane. And they're really good at the game, like way better than me.
And I guess for you, James, do you have any questions for Yan regarding the early access side?
I think he pretty much said it, but I think it's really cool that the early access has really been able to help a studio like his and testing and getting feedback with a lot of the people that are playing it. And like you said, like I think gamers have a lot more time to play games than the people who make games. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but with the early access, one thing I might add to that is there has been a lot of negative things going around about early access. So some games that have, you know, people say they have conned the players or whatever. And so I'm really happy that we have our full release, that we can say, okay, we got through that all right. and tell other people that early access does work and it is a good system. And we are proponents of it.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with you on that as well, Yan, regarding early access. I mean, we've spoken to developers and over the years who have gone through the early access. One example would be Zach Barth from Zachtronics. And I remember when I first spoke to him, I think it was like 2012, 2013, he was like, I don't like early access. I'm not going to do that with my game. Yeah. And then like last year, I spoke to him about going on early access with his latest game. He's like, yeah, I loved it. I'm going to do that for every one of my games now. And it really is a great tool when you have a studio that can commit to it and you also have a game that works for it. As we've talked about many times, not every game, I think, can fit on early access. Like, if you have a linear 5-hour RPG, there's not much value in early access there.
Yeah.
But when you're designing, like, a massive title, like a sandbox or a procedurally generated game that has, you know, the replayability and the detail for someone to really dig into, as you said, you can have who knows how many hundreds of thousands of eyes peering at every inch of your game, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Our game lends itself really well for that. And I think, and this is just my personal opinion, that early access stretches the game development, and some games profit more from that than others. So ours did very well with that, but for other games and other developers, it's maybe not good to have such a long development phase.
Yeah. And again, it's always that push and pull of how much you're willing to, or how much you're willing and able to put into a game versus, again, those nasty real-world constraints that can get in the way.
Yeah, they do all the time. I think the most important issue is losing motivation throughout the development.
Now, here's a question for you, Ian, that I was thinking about. When it comes to early access, again, one of the challenges is committing to a schedule. Because, again, you're not just developing your game in a vacuum. You have all your fans hungering and, you know, clawing at every new version you release. And one of the things that I think I see a lot of first-time developers kind of get slipped up on is keeping to an update schedule. I've seen developers go with stuff like every month. Some developers are crazy enough to do like once a week a new build, and then that would just like overwhelm them. for you guys and with developing Battle Brawlers on Early Access, what kind of like update schedule did you find that like worked the best for you?
So we did like actually two different things. So one thing was a developer blog that we would write, and the other was the actual updates to the game. So we wanted to have bigger and more meaningful updates and updates with more content, and but we still wanted to keep the people in the loop and keep them engaged. So we wrote a developer's blog on our website like every week or every other week, so really often. And in those, we would talk about the feature, what we're working on, the features we have in mind, and so on. And then we would do the updates separately from that. So at some point, we had like 3 months without an update to the game, which is pretty insane in early access. But we managed to keep the people engaged through all these development blocks and keep them involved in the development during that time.
Yeah. And that is, I think, a really good thing to do. Yeah, and I think a good suggestion for developers listening is you always have to keep your community in the know about what's happening with your game. Again, one of the surefire ways to kill a project is to go completely dark on it. No updates, no blog. Because the second people start wondering what's happening with your game, that can begin sort of like this cascading failure of people losing faith in the project.
Yeah, very true. It's the level of communication with a development team, or at least a PR person in general, to the success of the game is pretty much a straight line. Like you're always going to gain more respect, even if your game doesn't do that well. You're always going to gain more respect from in the industry and from your fans if you keep in contact with them and tell them what's going on. Tell them what, you know what I mean? And like, you'd be surprised how many people, like, you know what I mean, will give constructive, you know. I think a lot of young developers will be surprised how constructive some of the people will be in that process as well. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're gonna have the angry keyboard warrior troll. Why isn't this game releasing right now? Why isn't this on a platform that I like? Well, you know, but if you look past those, you actually, I think there is a really good community that is open and wants to play your game. Like they want to, you know, and they want to know that the people on the other side of the industry are hearing them.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. Sometimes I see games who didn't have a dev blog or whatever in like 2 or 3 months, and then I say, like, where's the problem? Because and when they say, yeah, I don't have anything to write about, then just do like some small bit of what you're thinking or whatever. Just give them a life sign, and that's so easy to do. And I see a lot of developers who go silent for months, and I think that's really big mistake.
Yeah, and again, like, one of the things about early access, and we can say a lot about like trying to build a game over the long term, is trying to keep that support going. Because once people lose faith in your project, it's almost impossible to win them back. And as we were saying a few minutes ago regarding the early access failures that we've seen, many of those projects they've died due to developers not understanding, you know, the extent that they were going to make the game, not giving the community enough feedback, and sometimes just, you know, flat out giving up on the game. And again, like, each one of these bad examples, you know, it's like, you know, like one bad apple spoils the bunch. It makes it that much harder to get people to support the next early access or the next Kickstarter or anything like that.
Yeah. Yes, we have a lot of YouTubers who we wrote to, like, here's our early access game, would you like to cover it? And a lot of them wrote, no, I don't do early access. So, because they are afraid that the game won't finish, or it is already a problem.
Yeah, I know. And I'm definitely not like that. For developers watching this, for those of you who have seen the YouTube channel, you know that I routinely will check out games that are in alpha or early access as a spotlight. And one of the things I always do is say that, you know, this is still an early access, or this is still an alpha. You know, this is not the current version of the game kind of thing. But it is very important, I think, to take a look at games like this, and it's always fascinating to watch, like, as someone who loves to talk about design and studies it, it's always fascinating to see that game go from A to B to Z in terms of its development.
Yeah. And maybe one thing I can add to the communication side is maybe as a tip to other developers is that you always have to be open about what you're doing. So we had like this crazy feature list in the beginning and with really insane features, and we had to cut a lot of them ultimately, but we didn't try to cover that up. So we said, okay, listen, guys, we checked our resources and we won't be able to get this in the game, but we decided to do another thing. And so people, usually if you're open to them, they won't get that much upset if you try to hide something or if you just don't talk about it at all. That's always a very bad idea.
Yeah, at that point, it's kind of seen as like an admission of guilt or you're trying to lie or put something over on the person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's not good in a life sense, much Definitely. Less a professional one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's better to rip the Band-Aid off versus, you know, ignoring it and saying that there's no problem.
That there's no problem. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, I guess my last, early access related question, and then we'll move on to another topic. And I think I may know the answer to this one, but I always like to ask developers. So, as we've said, Battle Brothers has wrapped up out of early access. I actually just saw one more other one, but I'll say that in a second. But Battle Brothers is out of early access. It's released now. So my question for you, Yan, is, after, you know, the extent of going through early access, do you see yourself and Overhype returning to early access for whatever your next project may be in, you know, however long in the future that will happen?
Yeah, definitely, because it just helped us so much with polishing the game. And a lot of positive reviews actually mentioned the polish and the lack of bugs. And one thing I would try is to get the early access phase less long. So just about like 3 to 6 months maybe and not 2 years.
Yeah. And of course, again, you never know sometimes how long it will take to make a game like that. Now, here's one other question that I just thought of that I think this is a very important one for developers who may be listening. And that is that switch from beta or alpha to 1.0. As we've said many times over on these casts, there's always that challenge or that allure of just keep working on the game. You know, you're just keep polishing it to the point that, you know, you could have put out this game who knows how many more times over, but you keep working on it. And for a lot of developers, that, you know, pushing that button and taking over to 1.0 is a very big deal. And sometimes it's even hard to know just, you know, at what point do I say my game is quote unquote done? And that can be especially true of a game like Battle Brothers or any game with procedural or randomized content and design. My question for you, Yan, is how did you guys decide on, okay, we're now at 1.0, like we're ready to, you know, flip the switch kind of deal?
So basically, this is actually a really tricky one because we planned the release for February 2016. Mm-hmm. And that's like over a year ago. And it's you really have to be careful about this feature creep that you keep adding small things, especially if you are in an environment where you don't have set dates with a publisher or milestones or whatever. So what we did is that we set a fixed release date. And then we discussed, okay, what features will we get into that time frame and which do we have to cut? So we basically came from the back there. We didn't say, okay, these features have to go in. How long does it take? But we set the date to like March, February 2017. And then we said, okay, what can we get done until then? Because, you always have to be aware of your funds and you never know how long your, the people will be kept interested in your game. So at any point you could run out of funds and you really have to be careful about that. And but still now we've been working for 2 years on the game and we have kept adding content. So now the 1.0 is out. People start asking, where's the new content patch? And it's like, the game is done. So, with the first bug fix patch, people were disappointed that there was no content like 3 days after the release. So that's the expectations you start to grow during early access. You have to be aware of that.
Yeah. And it's always that challenge again of just figuring out, is this a feature that's going to make or break my game that must be in it? Or is this something that is nice to have, But, you know, it's more important that we do this, this, and this to get this game done.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's what we did. We made a list of all the features, and then we put them a make or break or nice to have or a priority on them. And yeah, most nice to have features actually got kicked out. So yeah, I mean, some really small features that we didn't have on the list made it in because it turned out they were really small and could be added in a day or two.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think that's a really good strategy, and something that developers need to think about, not only if you're just designing a game, but again, with the early access in mind, because as we've said, it's very tempting if you don't have a set schedule, you don't have, you know, a boss or a publisher saying you must release your game here, to just keep working on a game. But as you said, Ian, eventually there comes a point where interest may fade or funding may eventually go out. Yeah. And it's better to release the game when you know that you're at a point where it's good enough versus having to release it as, you know, an emergency, you know, in between major builds or something like that.
Yeah, like that's exactly the case. And you see some early access titles which are very successful and they keep running in early access for like 5 years or so because developers don't see the need to actually release them. But I think that's not a good thing because I want to do more things. I want to do more games. I want to, you know, move on. I don't want to spend like all my life with Battle Brothers.
Yeah. And as you said, one of the major things that can kill a game is just the developer losing interest or motivation to keep going. And that is a serious thing, especially for first time or novice developers about trying to keep going. Again, you know, working 3 to 6 months on a game is a lot different than working, you know, 2 to 3 years, or some developers go like 4 or 5 years on a single project.
Yeah, during the development, we had like at least 10 times we wanted to throw it all in the bin. And that was especially during the first 3 years where I've been working in the evenings and on the weekends besides our regular full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. And at some point you were like, you know, working all day and then in the evening working on Battle Brothers, and you do that for, you know, you do that for a month or for two, it's no problem, or 5 or 10, but you do that for 3 years, and that's really hard. So I think losing motivation is, I think, this number one thing, and you can only get through that if you do something that you really love and that you're really passionate about. If you do anything because you think it will give you, it will get you money, that's not enough motivation. That can't carry you through 3 years.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We have a few more topics to discuss, but before we move on, James, do you have any other questions for Yan at this time?
No, not at all. It's really cool to get a chance to chat with him. I really enjoy some of the views he has on the industry and stuff. So
cool. Now, here's a question that is, it has like no like relation to any of the topics we're going to talk about, but it's one that I have to ask, and that is about the music of Battle Brothers. It is amazing, like the soundtrack you have in that game, from the overworld map to kind of like the music that plays during the different battles, like the kind of like that creepy music during the undead fights, just like really sets the tone. How did you guys come up with the soundtrack for the game?
Okay, that's a pretty amazing coincidence, and I can hardly recall, but somehow we got in touch with Dennis and Patrick, who are two guys here from Hamburg as well. Mm-hmm. And they are not even full-time musicians, so they're doing this on the side. And they've been doing like a couple of game soundtracks, but for really small projects and mostly sci-fi space games. So they've never done fantasy music before Battle Brothers.
Oh, wow.
And they tried it out, and then they did a couple of songs, and they were really amazing. And over the, they've been with us for like 3 years already. They've grown so much into this project and got new instruments and got new libraries and everything. And now we have like 30 tracks in the game. And they are really a passionate part of the team, basically. And all of the music is basically coming from them, from their inspiration. So yeah, we're very lucky to have found them.
Nice. So with that said, I know we are starting to approach the hour, so I have two more, I guess, general topics I want to run by you again, and then we will wrap things up for tonight. So the first one is, I want to talk about some of the points that I brought up in my review of the game, some of the points where I had trouble with Battle Brawlers. I won't get your thoughts on these, or like what you think about these, because I'm sure these are complaints or criticisms that other fans have brought up as well. So, the first one, as we've said before, the beginning of Battle Brawlers is definitely one of the harder parts of the game. Again, going back to XCOM as well. And one of the things that I had trouble with was the fact that it kind of felt that if I lost, like, anything major, like, in the first, like, two or three battles of the game, you know, I have, like, three or four Battle Brawlers wipe, I don't get any good gear, or I can't find any provisions, I might as well just restart. And my point was that it kind of felt that the negative feedback loop of the game was really heavy at the beginning. And I was just wondering, like, as you're going through the feedback and looking at the balancing side, is that something that other people have been saying about Battle Brawlers?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something I feel the same as well. But the problem is with the spiraling, it goes in both ways. Yeah. Because we at some point in the game, we had like this positive spiral, which got really out of hand when when people got so strong really quickly that there was no challenge in the game at all. Mm-hmm. And we have those very different systems that interlocking, like the money, and if you're losing men, you need more money to replace them. But if you have few men, you cannot take on the good contract, so you don't make any money and you don't get any loot. And so this negative spiraling is a really big issue. And the whole topic of recovering from losses is the one thing that defines the balancing most in the game, I think. And it's the most difficult part to pull off, because if you have like a guy with level 10 in the end of the game and you lose that guy, then you basically lost like lots of hours of leveling that character. Yeah, and I think we're still not at the sweet spot of making losses count. They must not be completely irrelevant, but on the other hand, making the player be able to do a comeback, and that's, I have to agree, that's really tricky, and it's off on some points.
Yeah, and as you said, Ian, it's also when you add in the fact that you have these multiple systems that are connected to each other, that it just grows that problem exponentially, because as we've seen with any game like this that has multiple systems, changing one impacts the other. If you, for instance, say, let's just triple the gold or triple the crown to get at the start, then what that will do will mean that will make it easier to buy gear, which means that players will now have an influx of gear that will then affect combat. And then if you affect combat, it just creates this, as you said, this spiral or cycle. And as you said, as you can have a death spiral, you can also have that spiral of just, you know, so much progress that you just essentially break the game. And that also runs into a problem of trying to get that sweet spot of being easy enough that someone isn't immediately crushed, but at the same time, you still want your game to have that bite to it. And as you said, making death a major part of it.
Yeah, that one of the things is that with Battle Brothers, the player skill is so important, or the knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
Because for me now, it's getting through the early games, I think it sometimes is a bit too easy. But if you're a new player and you don't know the tactics, the gear, what to do, what to buy, and there are so many mistakes that you can make, there's no way you can get through that on the first try. So you have the freedom to big success, but you also have like the freedom to fail, basically. And that's always the player has to have the right mindset for that. And I think there are many people with most games doing a lot of hand holding and people who don't like that approach.
Yeah. And again, it's all about the kind of game you're trying to build. And it can be hard to, you know, walk the player through it without just holding their hand the entire time. And that actually reminds me, do you guys, like, the tutorial game, again, it's very brief. You have the first battle with the guy who killed your company, and then you're kind of let loose into the world. Have you thought about going over the tutorial parts of Battle Brawlers, or do you think that it's enough for what's in the game right now?
Yeah, well, that's also a resource thing, so we wanted so many things in the game that we had to cut back on the whole tutorial part a bit. And we tried to do some videos on the game and link them from the game directly to show people how it's done and to somehow remedy a bit the lack of a tutorial. And I agree that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. And that actually takes me to another complaint that I know a few of the friends I've been talking to have been making, and that is the fact that there's a lot of things that are kind of obscured about the mechanics and decision making of Battle Brothers. One would be like how the stats work and the stars. I know there's probably been a major point about how much information you show about someone when you're trying to hire them in the various towns. Like right now, all you get is basically the little blurb, their costs, and then you get like their little picture of them with whatever gear they may have. I know some people I've been hearing saying that they would like to have a little bit more information about what this character does or what their stats are before they obviously decide to hire them. And I'm sure for you and the other guys overhype, you probably went through a lot of deliberation about just how much information you want to give the player.
Yes, that's also from the story aspect that we wanted the game to be not a min-max game, but a game about stories. And if you had too much information about the characters, you just wouldn't hire the bad ones. So we could just kick those out. And we have people who have like really bad traits, like being fat or being a coward or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to have those flawed characters to play a role in the game. And if we gave too much information, these would get sorted out in the first iteration. Mm-hmm. And also with the enemies, like in the original XCOM, you would see a sectoid in the dark and you would have no information about him, nothing. There's just a guy over there and you start shooting at them like crazy. And at some point he will drop. You wouldn't see his hit points. You wouldn't see his accuracy. You wouldn't see anything about him. And we wanted to a bit of recreate that feeling of, you know, being a bit in the dark and being more in the shoes of the actual characters. Mm-hmm. And of course there are lots of people who really want perfect information, but as I said, it's all from the story driven aspect of the game that we wanted to have imperfect information.
Yeah. And I guess here's my last question or last thing that I've heard people talk about, and then we'll move on to our final section for tonight. And this is one that I know that you've probably heard this many, many, many times on the forums, but if I don't ask this, I'm sure people will yell at me for not bringing it up. And that is, of course, the fact that there are no female characters in the game, that it is strictly male mercenaries. And I know you guys mentioned this on the FAQs about hoping to do that in the future. So for the people listening, again, I know that probably a few of my fans have been wondering this as well. Do you think you will add in like female models or female mercenaries now that the game is done?
Yeah, well, we wanted to do that all along, but the thing is, we have this event system, and you know, creating the assets for the female mercs is not that big of a deal. Like, you have to have new sound effects, you have to have new backgrounds, you have to have new images, and all that. I mean, that's quite a lot of work, obviously. But with the event system, the texts are generated dynamically from text modules, and within these, it's really tricky to change the genders in the text, and we have so many events in the game that there was just no way we could be able to create all of those dynamically, because you cannot just copy them and do just the female version, but because you have so many characters within the events interacting and you have to make them all interchangeable. And that's quite a lot of work, and it's actually more work than we thought it would be. And that's the main reason we don't have them in the game right now.
Oh, so it's more of a technical of a technical aspect as opposed
it's not
to
wanted.
Not a choice.
And in our community there are some people who don't want them in the game, but I personally feel that they would just add to the atmosphere. Because we would give them unique backgrounds, so they wouldn't be just a female version of a fisherman. Yeah. So we'd just have unique backgrounds and so on.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it not only would add more diversity, but it will, you know, make your companies a little bit more interesting. But again, for the folks listening, I do you think that now that the game is out, will that be, you know, maybe something planned for the future?
It's, right now, it's a bit too early to say that. Mm-hmm. I would love to have that in the game, but right now we don't even know if we will do any expansions for the game. We have to wait like a couple mm-hmm. more weeks to say. Mm-hmm. And so I cannot make any predictions on that. But yeah, I personally would love to have them in the game.
All right.
Hmm.
I think with that, I know we have just probably we're going over an hour or about to. And again, we have a 6-hour time difference. So I know it is definitely late on your end, Yan. So I don't want to keep you too much longer. So with that, I think I just have a few more like final set of questions, and then we will wrap it up for tonight. So the first one, again, for those of you listening, we are recording this in early April. The game was just released. I think it's been like about a week, maybe a little bit more than that. I guess my first question is, at this like moment in time, I think we've said this before, but just to reiterate, how has the reception been for Battle Brothers on your end?
So I think that's basically two receptions. So the one is like the actual sales and the community, and the other one is the press and influencers. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So, but I think on both we did really well, and the sales have been really good. Mm-hmm. And with the sales, you know, they always say they're very spiky, so they will soar up in the beginning, but just a couple of days or a week or two later, they will go down a lot. So you always have to be careful about predictions. Mm-hmm. And but what we're doing well. And the other one is the press feedback or from influencers, and that has been really good. We've been hiring a really small German PR agency to help out with approaching magazines and YouTubers, and they did an amazing job. We got a lot of coverage, and but for me personally, we got some endorsements from really great guys like Josh Sawyer from Obsidian, mm-hmm. and or Julian Gollop, the creator of the original XCOM. That meant a lot of me.
Oh wow, that's cool.
And that's the sort of my personal highlights, and that really meant a lot to me. So we're really happy about how it has been received.
Yeah, definitely. And I wrote my review up. I think it's been about a week from this recording, and I definitely enjoy it. Like I said, I equate it to a fantasy XCOM, and I think the fact that you guys got the thumbs up from the original creator is certainly great.
Oh yeah, that is really amazing. Yeah, that speaks for itself right there.
I was really happy to see that on Twitter there.
Mm-hmm. So again, one of the challenges of recording this podcast in terms of when it goes up and when we're talking. So things may obviously change for this next question. And I know I asked this of you earlier in this cast, but what is, I guess, the current game plan for Battle Brothers going forward, at least from this time of recording?
So at the moment, and with the sales looking as they do now, our main goal is obviously staying in the computer game business and making more games, and that's basically what we want to achieve. But if the sales continue going like they do now, we will definitely do one expansion, and we already have some thoughts about what it will be about, but it's a bit early to share.
Okay.
And we hope it will be ready within this year. And we're aiming at some of like 6 month developing time, more or less. And and after that, we will see. We don't know yet. Maybe Battle Brothers 2, but no, we want to do something different probably then.
Yeah, and that's always an interesting decision, especially for any developers, about how they want to grow their company and their designs going forward. Because there's always that temptation to, as we said earlier, to just keep working on a game, you know, for 4 or 5 years, or to just focus on that one exclusive title, you know, Battle Brothers 2, 3, 4, 5, stuff like that. But it's interesting how we're seeing developers these days, especially some of the more popular indie devs, trying to establish themselves as a brand rather than just as one specific game or one specific genre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I can totally understand that, though. After like more or less 5 years of having Battle Brothers in my life for every day, at some point you really want to do something new and get some new inspirations and get something fresh into your mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Definitely. I guess with that, I mean, again, we could sit here and chat all day, our time, all night, your time. James, do you have any, like, final thoughts or final questions for Yan or anything about, like, for, like, the future of Overhype or Battle Brothers?
Yeah, definitely. I really think it's really cool that that you are like the people who had been talking about like the female characters, and you're like, hey, we hear you. That was a technical thing, and we really, you know, it might be something we're going to do in the future. I think that's really, really commendable. As a person in the industry, I think just for the people that might not know, where can we find Battle Brothers, and do you plan on taking it anywhere other than the place we can find it?
Yeah, right now it's available on Steam, on the Humble Store, and on Green Man Gaming. And a lot of people have been asking us about like a DRM-free version, like on good old games. Mm-hmm. And we are in contact with them. So we are not against like this DRM-free version. Some people are really afraid of, you know, their game getting pirated or whatever. But that's not our concern. So maybe there too soon. I don't know.
Have you thought about going console at all, or...?
Yeah, well, the input of the game is really designed for keyboard and mouse, so I think it's going to be pretty tricky to port it. But one of our musicians has been actually playing it on a tablet with the touch inputs, and it worked surprisingly well. So yeah,
ooh.
But no set plans for that.
Okay, yeah.
And that's always another big challenge. And again, that's easily another topic and a half when we start talking about porting, but. Yeah, definitely good to hear that the game is doing well. And yeah, I would definitely like to... It's always great to see if a game can be ported. As a very interesting aside, I know XCOM got some popularity, I think, when they released the tablet version, or they even managed to do a few... Yeah, they did do console versions for XCOM and XCOM 2. So it's always interesting, again, when you introduce a game like that to a market that's not known for playing like a turn-based strategy.
Yeah, that's what we thought. Like, our game is just very hardcore. It's really PC focused and also for the audience. So it's really uncasual, if that's a word. And so I'm not so sure about the success.
I guess one other question for me that I was just thinking about, is there a modding support or Steam Workshop for Battle Brothers right now?
So I think that the game would profit a lot from modding, but the problem is it has grown over the years from a hobby project, and so the code is not very well documented and not very easy to access for external people, and that makes the modding support like a really, really big issue. So something maybe down the road, but I'm not too positive about it.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's another really popular feature these days, especially, again, with the greater integration of Steam and being able to consolidate those mods. But, yeah, as you said, especially for, like, a game, like, this is not the same as a commercial project, you know, that was starting a major studio, well-documented with an easy-to-grasp engine. And also, there's the fact that many games, like, XCOM or XCOM 2, or I'm sorry, specifically XCOM 2, they basically had, you know, modding support, I think, almost figured out from the get-go. Like, that was a major cornerstone of what they wanted to add to the game. And it's a lot different than saying adding it to a project that's already completely done.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I think that's the same with translations. For us, we get asked on a daily basis for translations, but it's so much work because the we have like 250,000 words, more than half than The Witcher does, and they're all modularly combined in modular manner, and so it gets really tricky for us to translate the game, and I'm not sure that we have translations in the future.
Now, would you be accepting? Because I know there are a couple of titles out there that are if a foreign company like or a foreign fan like really loves your game and just has tons of time on their hands, would you be accepting of somebody else translating it for you?
The problem is that the texts are not readily available, but they are. They're spread across hundreds of scripts throughout the whole game. And so we first would have to go into every script, get the text out, and then prepare it for someone to translate. And that's a lot of work on our side.
All right. I think with that, we can probably wrap things up. I am about out of questions. James, do you have anything you want to throw in at the end?
Oh no, nothing I can really think of. But thank you for coming on the show. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was really happy to be there.
All right. Yep, definitely. And like I said, not only the best of luck with Battle Brawlers in the future, but once again, congratulations on going through and finishing the game. As we said at the start, it takes certainly passion to make a game and to go from, you know, a simple idea with you and your brawler to forming a company to then going through all of early access to getting the game out. It is certainly an accomplishment. So definitely hats off to you and the rest of Overhype.
Thanks a lot.
All right. So with that said, we are going to end things here for tonight. Thank you so much for staying with us and listening through the cast. As always, if you'd like to support GameWisdom, we have multiple options available. If you would like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest or live guest, be sure to send us an email. You can find submissions and information on the Submissions Wanted page on the front or by simply getting in touch with me, Josh, at game-wisdom.com. You can follow me on Twitter at GWBicer for updates throughout the day. You can find the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, and we also have a Twitch under GWBicer for daily plays. The YouTube channel now has grown for daily videos on games, as well as vlogs talking about design and the industry. You can find all those links on the front page as well. And last but not least, be sure to check out our Patreon campaign. There's a link on the front, and you can find it under GWBicer or Game Wisdom. Donations will help to keep things going, and we can hit goals. It will mean more content for everyone to enjoy. So once again, Yan, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you have a great night, and maybe we can do this again real soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot again for having me.
Mm-hmm. And James, thank you again for coming on. I think this was a great cast. It's always wonderful to talk to developers outside of like of our general region and see what's happening.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
All right. So I think with that, we are done. So once again, thank you for listening. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.